Hello, microbe friends. I'm Dr. Justine Dees, and welcome to the Joyful Microbe Podcast. It's the show all about the microbes we encounter in our daily lives. Thank you so much for tuning in. I can't wait to share this show with you. Today we're talking about a very special microscope called the Foldscope. Traditional microscopes can be expensive to buy and complex to use, so it's overwhelming to consider buying one, but even if you do get your hands on one, it can be intimidating to use because they seem so complex. This is a problem, especially in educational settings like the K-12 classroom, where microscopes are a great tool for learning about the microbial world and beyond. That's where the Foldscope shines. It's a simple, durable, and affordable microscope that's transforming science education. So today I'm chatting with Holly Stewart, education specialist for Foldscope Instruments. We'll talk about Holly's scientific and education background and journey to microbiology education, how Foldscope makes microscopy accessible and affordable, how the Foldscope even works. It's made of paper, so how's that possible that it actually does the job? Levels of magnification and views of microorganisms like tardigrades and even as small as bacteria, how the Foldscope was developed, and the ways that Foldscopes have been used in scientific research and beyond. We'll talk about some tips for educators to incorporate Foldscopes into their teaching. And we'll finish up with an at-home microbiology activity exploring microbes in your fish tank with the Foldscope. By the end, you'll see how Foldscope is breaking barriers in science education, making the microscopic world accessible to all. All right, let's get on to the interview. Hi, Holly. Thanks so much for coming on the Joyful Microbe Podcast.
Hey, Justine. It's good to be here.
I'm so excited to talk to you about this really cool microbiology tool called the Foldscope. And it's something that I have talked about on my website previously, and it's, I think, this amazing, accessible microscope that probably a lot of people are not even aware exists, but it's, I think, something that's very important in education, as well as just being able to use a microscope anywhere. So for anyone out there that's interested in trying out using a microscope, then this is a way that it's, you know, it's affordable, and then also it's portable. So I'm really excited to dive in and talk about this. But before we get into the Foldscope, how did you get interested in microbiology, and what was your path to becoming an education specialist at Foldscope Instruments?
Yeah, so I feel like we could probably do an entire podcast episode about my journey to where I am right now, because I did not have the traditional, education is in my, it's in my job title, so I was a teacher, but I didn't have that traditional path straight to teaching. My background is actually in chemistry, and I worked in industry for a while, and then I stayed home to raise kids. And when it was time for me to start thinking about, okay, now I can get back into the workforce, what do I want to do? I was realizing I didn't really want to go back into, you know, working in a lab and things like that. I wanted to do something a little bit different. And I started looking at, you know, as when you have kids, you really start paying attention to what's going on in the world around you. So I started thinking more in terms of environmental issues that are affecting us. So I went back to school and I got another degree, and this time it was a degree in environmental studies. And through that, I was able to start, I got some jobs with informal science education. So I was teaching where kids would come to me on field trips, and we would be in down by the river, walking through the woods, through local gardens, things like that. and I was teaching them science, but in the outdoors. And then from there, I made the switch over to working for the school district. I started off as at an elementary level, not as a traditional classroom teacher, but I was at a school that was a language immersion school. It was actually pretty interesting. It was Spanish. The children spent half their day in Spanish and half their day in English. And I was the science teacher. But so I taught all of the kids kindergarten through fifth grade. But when they came to my classroom, we only spoke Spanish. It was so much fun. Yeah, because the kids would come to me, and you know, there were a lot of them that didn't speak the language, but they would still have fun coming to my classroom because they knew they were going to do something. They knew that when they came to Senora Stewart's classroom, it was going to be, we're going to get our hands messy, we're going to do all kinds of, you know, fun stuff. I did that for a couple of years, and then I transitioned to middle school, and that's where I spent most of my time, was teaching eighth grade science in middle school, and that was a lot of fun. I really found the age that I was able to connect with, and apparently it's eighth graders. And you know, it gets people kind of look at you like, really, middle school? You know, it's either people love it or they're like, there's no way I could do it. I loved working with the middle schoolers. They were so much fun. Just the questions that they would ask, and you know, their genuine curiosity that they have. It was a great experience for me, and it really showed me the one, I don't know if I'd say downside, but the one thing that I did notice between elementary school and middle school was, like I said, these kids in elementary school, they came to my classroom super excited. They couldn't wait to see what we were going to do next. Some of those same students, because it was a feeder school to the middle school where I was, so some of those same students, when they came back to me in eighth grade, these kids were now telling me, I'm not good at science, I'm no good at this, I really don't like science. And it was just a complete 180 from what I saw in them at that younger level, at that younger age. And it just really made me think, okay, I need to intentionally create a classroom where kids feel comfortable with the science. Because, you know, you throw a lot of the complicated words and, you know, terminology, and then you have, oh my gosh, we have to do math in here too. It really gets people nervous, and they start getting scared of the content, and then they can't connect with it and have fun with it. So I tried to make my classroom one where, you know, it was one where, you never knew what we were going to do. You knew that you were going to be able to do something with your hands. I was going to make sure that they, you know, had tools and all that kind of stuff to help them learn the science. And I really think that helped to make a difference, and maybe, you know, getting that I'm scared of science, I'm no good at science out of their brains, and made it, oh my gosh, I can be a scientist. I'm thinking like a scientist. Wow, this is what a scientist does. So I did that for a few years. I was probably about 6 years, I think, I was at the middle school level. And then I made the transition to Foldscope. And like I said, I'm the education specialist for Foldscope, and it is, it's a great experience for me because I'm able to, you know, when I think about what is my job role, I basically create resources so that not just teachers and people in schools, you know, not just teachers and students, but so that everyone can learn how to use a Foldscope microscope and feel comfortable with it and have fun with it and enjoy the process of discovery that comes with science. So that's what I've been doing here at Foldscope, and I'm going on 2 years with the company now. So
that's so cool. I like that you brought up the difference between the elementary school students and the middle school students, and I think that I wonder if there's a shift that, or I don't know, that shift that happens. I wonder if that's because people, I don't know if it's external or internal, that students start to get it in their heads whether they're gifted or not, or they're meant to be a scientist or not, or they're meant for STEM or they're not. And I don't know where that comes from. I'm sure people who are in education know more about this, but it's something that I really, I don't know, I find it kind of sad that everybody goes through that process of realizing, I'm good at math, I'm bad at math. I'm good at science, I'm bad at science. And some people, they tell themselves that for the rest of their lives, and they don't realize that you can learn these things. You don't have to be stuck in this place of I'm bad at this or that, because you mm-hmm. can get better at these subjects. And so I like that you are, you're using hands-on activities, or you were using hands-on activities for these students to try to help them to see that it's something that they can enjoy and, learn and have fun with. So I really like mm-hmm. that.
And they don't have to know all the answers. The important thing, and this goes with even with, using the fold scopes and the trainings and stuff that I do now, you don't have to know everything to be able to use the tool. The tool is mm-hmm. is to help you discover and find those new things, to keep you asking questions. I mean, honestly, when I was in the classroom, and I feel like even now, like I said, my background is not microbiology. My background is, chemistry. So this world of living things is like, whew, my mind is just like, whoa, there's so much out there.
Yeah.
But I'm constantly saying, I don't know. Mm-hmm. People will ask me a question. I don't know, but how can we figure it out? And as long as you take that next step to the I don't know answer, mm-hmm. then you're still progressing and learning and moving forward. And I think that we need to, help people to stop thinking that I don't know is a bad thing, mm-hmm. because it's not. It just means you don't know it right now. But like you said, you can learn it. So, mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's the difference between the fixed mindset versus a growth mindset.
100%.
And embracing the growth mindset that we can learn these things. We're not stuck. So, mm-hmm. yeah. I really want to talk about the fold scope now. So, microscopy, it's traditionally been associated with complex and expensive equipment. So can you tell us, how is FoldScope different? How is it revolutionizing microscopy? And also, how does it address accessibility and affordability in science education?
Yeah, so the two things that you said there, the complex and expensive, those were the first two things that the founders of the company said, we need to get rid of those two associations with microscopes and microscopy. So really, it's the key parts of our mission with the company are, we're all about equity and accessibility. So equity meaning that the science tools that we have shouldn't only be in the hands of the people who have enough money to be able to afford it. Science tools really need to be made available and accessible to everyone. And it shouldn't matter how much money you have, where you live, if you have access to all these other resources. And some of those resources are things like electricity, just something as basic as that. And everyone should be able to use these tools to learn about the world around them. And so one of the key things is that the cost of a fold scope is about $2. So you're looking at, traditional lab bench microscopes, can be hundreds of dollars. And when you're looking at a school that has, a classroom that's got, 30 kids in there, you're lucky sometimes if you can have one microscope available to all 30 of those kids. But with fold scopes, you can actually, that with that price barrier dropping, then you can actually have a fold scope, a fully functional microscope, in the hands of every student. Mm-hmm. So that just completely changes the playing field for how you can learn science. And then, of course, that deals with the affordability and accessibility. The other part of it, accessibility is more than just the financial access to tools. It is also, as we were talking about before, that mental part of it too. Like when you see something that's super expensive, I don't think I want to touch that because I might break it, and then I'm responsible for it and all that kind of stuff. Whereas if you're, you give somebody a Foldscope and it's made of paper, you can bend it, you can toss it in the water, it floats, you just dry it off and wipe it off and you can still keep going. Even if you rip it, you can tape it because it's made of paper, you know? I mean, it's one of those things where it takes away that intimidation factor for accessibility. And, you know, the pieces, all the parts of a microscope are here. But it's done in a way that, in my mind, it just seems like it's easier to understand because it's paper and that's something that people can connect with and understand how paper functions and being able to fold something, which is where the name Foldscope came from. But, you know, to be able to have that complexity part of it taken away, and then you can just take the time to actually enjoy and use the tool rather than being worried about, you know, am I doing this right? Or, you know, just use it, try it out, and it's okay.
Yeah, I love that. I love that you mentioned the electricity part. I didn't even think about that. Like, how cool that is that you hold it up and use the light around you to actually view the specimen. So
it's
kind of crazy.
There's nothing to plug in with this at all. Yeah. It's just, you know, you take it out of your pocket, put something in there, hold it up, and you can see what's, you know, the microscopic world.
Yeah. So, okay, can we just talk about how it works exactly? We've talked about that it's folded and there's paper, but, you know, that's hard to imagine for someone who's never seen the Foldscope before. What is, how does it work exactly?
Okay, so, and it, I'm going to, you know, because I know that people might not be watching, some people just, you know, listen and everything, but the Foldscope itself, it's made of paper. All of the parts are, it's a waterproof paper, so like I said, you can get it wet. And then it has magnets that hold stuff in place, so if you listen, it clicks and snaps into place when you've got it on there. But it has in the same way that a microscope has a stage where you put your slide that you can move around in the XY plane, you know, you can move it left to right, up and down. It has that same thing on it, so you can move your sample back and forth, you can move your sample up and down. It has a focus ramp, so normally for a lab bench microscope, you raise the stage up and down to get your sample closer to or further away from your lens. The lens is on the front, the sample goes in the back, and that little bit of space, because it is a very tiny lens that we're using, but that this focus ramp, it's something that, it's a piece of paper, again, that is folded so that one side is thinner than the other. So when you slide it, it either gives you less distance between the lens and your sample in the back, or to the other end, where it pushes and puts space between your sample and the lens. So that's how you get your focus. So again, same parts that are on a traditional lab bench microscope are right here on this one. And the other thing that's really cool about this too is that we say that, you know, we want people of all ages using microscopes and, you know, but people get nervous about glass. You know, oh my gosh, glass slides, you know, little kids might break a glass slide. One of the other things that we've looked at is making these slides out of paper. So we have, it looks like just a regular playing card, you know, just like a deck of cards, but it's for you to be able to make a slide, and it's made out of paper. And again, you can put water samples on this and everything. But it again keeps it so that level of that feeling of being scared to use it. It's again, even your sample can be made, you know, using paper, and you just put it into the back, close it up, and then you can look at your sample through there. But it still works with glass slides. So I don't want teachers to feel like, oh my gosh, I have to go out and buy all new stuff. If you've got glass slides, the prepared slides or anything like that, you can still use them with this. So it is compatible with everything that's out there, but it just gives you a new way to be able to approach microscopy if you're doing this for the first time too. So
yeah, that's really cool. So the playing cards, you get like a few of those, right? And then there are, I assume they're like reusable.
Yeah, so they are reusable. So you can, you know, you use, we have stickers that you use, clear stickers. Instead of using a glass cover slip, you just use those stickers on there. And then you can peel them off and put a new sample on there. Or if you want to keep it on there, you can. The other thing I like is that they're blank. So you can draw on them and decorate them and, you know, make them all pretty if you want to. So there's you can make them so that it's a permanent thing, but you can reuse them. And we do have them. They sell them in bulk if you wanted to buy a pack of blank ones, if the ones that come with the fold scope itself aren't enough, if you need more.
I see. Okay. So like for teachers, because I'm just thinking about using this in the classroom, you're going to go through a lot of these and then you get the stickers with the fold scope. But what like what's the best way to go about that? Do they just buy a pack of the cards and the stickers so that they can have a whole bunch for their class?
Yeah, I mean, so the classroom kits come with sets of 20. So you get, you know, 20 fold scopes, and then you get I think they come with two cards each. So each fold scope would come with two of the blank cards. And like I said, you can reuse these. So, you know, kids can make a slide, look at their sample, study it, analyze it, take everything off, make a new one. So they are reusable. But if you want to have more, then you definitely can. You can buy the stickers. We sell them in bulk. We sell the cards in bulk. So those are available as well. And the other thing I didn't mention too, with the fold scope, the new one that we have now, this is the 2.0, it's the green one. It has lenses that are of multiple magnifications. So the traditional microscope that fold scope makes is 140 times magnification. But with the 2.0, so again, everything's held on there with magnets, you can take off the 140x lens and you can replace it with a 50x lens, and again it's just a magnet, just pops right on to the front there. And we also have a 340x lens, so it really does open up the world of the microscopic world in terms of what you're able to see. One of the things I was most excited when I heard about this for the 340, because I'm like, oh my gosh, I can see stuff that's even smaller now, and I think it's going to be really cool. And it is, but I was really surprised at how much I was able to use the 50X lens. So like if you're looking at, not necessarily looking at the microbes, but looking at things like, you know, bugs or insects or things like that, where with the 140x, you wouldn't be able to see the whole entire organism in your field of view. With the 50x, now you can. And you can watch them, you know, if you set it up, you can watch them actually crawling around and stuff, and you can see the whole thing. And that's been a really cool and fun feature of using the different magnifications. It's just what you're able to see with each one. So,
yeah, that's really cool. Yeah. Since this is, you know, we talk about microbiology and we talk about the small stuff all the way down to bacteria. So, you guys sent me the new fold scope and I tried it out with looking at a kombucha sample, which has bacteria and yeast. And I found that I was actually able to see the organisms from the kombucha, and I thought that was really cool. So I want to hear about your experience of looking at the smaller organisms, like tardigrades. That's like the bigger of the microbes, and then all the way down to bacteria. Like, what have you found? What have people that your customers, like, what are they seeing and experiencing with the microbial world with the fold scope?
Yeah, so one of the things that is really cool is, just like you said, how much more you're able to see. Because you could see with the original fold scope with the 140x lens, you are able to see bacteria, but that, you know, like, you, as you know, they're really, really teeny. So you'd look at it and you'd zoom in on, like, if you're using your phone or something like that, you're able to see them. But now with the ability to use that 340x lens, I was so surprised the first time I looked in and I saw one. And again, my microbiology knowledge is about that much. But the different shapes of bacteria, and there's the one that's the spiral. And I was able to see this spiral on my slide, and I was just like, oh my gosh, there it is. That is so cool. So yeah, it's really neat what you're able to see. And, you know, people are starting to, you know, we have a website called The Microcosmos, and I know that's going to be the link to that on the show notes. But it's a website where people can submit their pictures that they take or videos that they take with their Foldscopes, and it just the stuff that people are able to see with these, you know, the mm-hmm. things that are swimming around and all the ciliates and the amount of detail that you're actually able to see on, like, I remember the first time I watched a paramecium swimming around using the 340, like, you can see so much detail. It's mind-blowing. It really is.
It's really cool. Yeah, I have the original Foldscope, and it's amazing that you can, I just remember putting it together and thinking, like, wow, I can't believe this works. It's so cool. But then getting the 2.0 and then having that 320X lens available, it's like, man, you can really see so much more with it. And then, of course, like you said, there's a way to attach your phone to the mm-hmm. Foldscope, and then you can zoom in and see even more. So I think it's so cool. Mm-hmm. And I love that you're able to see bacteria with it. I know there are people interested in tardigrades. So have you looked at tardigrades? Have, you know, anybody on the Microcosmos, like, posted pictures of that? How does that turn out?
Yeah. Tardigrades are always fun. And we do have, I'm trying to think if there's been any recent postings with the 2.0. But I know the original, we have on the Microcosmos, there's a whole write-up there's one person who was like one of our super users, and he wrote up this whole entire thing on the procedure and how he went about, you know, preparing his moss and lichen samples to be able to find the tardigrades. So those, you know, that is out there for you if you're like, okay, yeah, I have no idea where to begin. That information is there. And it was he had pictures along with each descriptive, with each step. I mean, it's a wonderful post. So cool. But yeah, I have seen I have seen tardigrades with the original and with the 2.0. And the thing that when I was kind of looking into tardigrades and learning about them, one of the things that I learned is that, you know, the way that you tell the difference between different species is one of the key things is looking at their claws. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking, how the heck does anybody, you know, using a regular at-home microscope get close enough to be able to see the claws? You know, like, mm-hmm. those are so teeny. Like, the tardigrade itself is small, and then you look at just that one tiny part of it. But when I saw it with the 2.0, and I was, oh my gosh, I can see the claws. It does have, like, the two and two, and the way that they're described are the, you know, the ones that go four across. I was like, it's really there, and it's really so cool. Neat. So you are able to see just so many more details, and, you know, looking at the mouth parts, and it's just, yeah. So wow. You definitely can, you know, still use the 140 to see, like, the whole body. I mean, because that's just fun to be able to see them just kind of crawling around and doing their thing. Mm-hmm. But when you're wanting to get into something a little more specialized and be able to say, okay, what kind of tardigrade do I have? You have the tool to be able to do that now, to really look closely at those identifiable features that distinguish one from another. And it's really cool to be able to see that.
That is really cool. I love that. I know that there will be people excited about getting to look at tardigrades. So how did the founders come up with this idea? Like, can you just tell us briefly what the story is?
Yeah. So Manu Prakash is a professor at Stanford, and Jim Cebulski was one of his graduate students in his lab. Those are the two that created the Foldscope. So this was, 2010. Don't quote me on the years. I was not with the company at this time, but sometime around there, they took a trip to India, and they were looking at sample blood samples because their area of interest was malaria. And the way that you are able to determine if a blood sample has malaria is you use a microscope to be able to actually look at the cells under the microscope. And huge problem that they found was that there were either no microscopes, the microscopes were, you know, broken, unused, or they just weren't accessible in the places where they were. And knowing what a big health problem malaria is, like globally, they saw this as a huge need in terms of being able to being able to diagnose, I guess, the blood samples that had malaria. And so they came back, and Manu basically charged his lab with the question, saying, "Okay, here's our goal. How can we make a microscope that is, you know, doesn't require electricity, that's portable, you can use it in the field?" And not only did he give them that constraint, but then he said he wants it to cost a dollar. You know, and it was like, what?
How?
So they exactly. So what I love about this is for teachers of design, you know, in classrooms, you know, you talk about the design cycle and, you know, all the different steps to be able to create something, and then you have to change it, make modifications, and you keep going. That is what they did. They came up with a ton of different ideas. And then finally, I'm not sure exactly when the aha moment was, but they were using, you know, paper to kind of make their models. And then it was kind of like, why don't we just use the paper to make the microscope? And so they started thinking about ways, you know, in the same way that like NASA with their, you know, so many of the things that go out into space, they have to be folded so that they're really compact and then they can open up once they're out in space and everything. So they started thinking about ways to use origami style folding to make a microscope. And that's so cool. How it really, so that's how it all came about. And they, you know, started making them. They've been through a lot of different iterations of them. Well before I joined the company, the original one that they first started prototyping was white. And so it was so sometimes you'll see, if you look back at old pictures of fold scopes, there's a white one that's there. And then the one that was finally able to be sold and, you know, production and all that kind of stuff came about in 2016. And that was the blue and yellow one, which is the one that I think you're most familiar with. And so that's the original one. And then just the last year, toward the end of last year, 2023, is when the 2.0 came out. So basically just looking at, you know, things that customers have said based on, you know, their experiences with the original. It's just that constant mindset of how can we keep improving and what can we do? And so that's where, you know, the multiple lenses came from, the thicker focus ramp also came from that. And then the ability to use the cards for slides was another thing that came with it. So, Yeah.
That's really cool. So are researchers, do researchers use these microscopes, or are there people like out in the field, you know, like healthcare practitioners or anything like that, or microbiologists in the field using these?
Yeah, definitely. And we have a whole, on our website, there's a whole slew of publications of, you know, where people have used foldscopes to do their research. So it is not just something that you should think is only something that can be used in the elementary, middle, and high school levels. It truly is a real scientific tool. So people are using it out in the field. I'm trying to remember some of that. There's, you know, lots of agricultural applications. When you think about, when you think about the soil microbiome and how important that is, and understanding what's in your soil, and now you've got a tool where the actual person who's working with that soil can study it, analyze it right there without having to send it off to someone else and wait for them to give them back the results. You can actually look at it and you can, you know, figure out what's in your soil or, you know, what's not in your soil, because that's sometimes a problem too, is that you don't have the right microbiome there to support the plant life that you're trying to, you know, that you're trying to grow. So, agricultural implications, so many issues with water quality, you know, being able to look at.
Hey there, it's me, Justine, founder of Joyful Microbe. Guess what? I'm not just passionate about spreading microbiology joy through my podcast. I'm also interested in helping others create engaging scientific content. As a freelance science writer and editor with a PhD in microbiology, I bring a blend of scientific expertise and effective communication. No need to hire two people to get the job done. I've got it all covered. If you love what I've created on Joyful Microbe, imagine what we can do together for your project. Whether you're a life science company or an academic and need compelling content, I'm here to help. If you've got something in mind and want to chat about it, send me an email at justine@justinedees.com or check out my website, justinedees.com. Let's turn your ideas into awesome science content. Can't wait to collaborate with you. Now, back to the show.
What is in the water? That's another big one. And I can't speak to the health, health and medical related ones. That's just not in my wheelhouse. And I do not want to speak on something that I don't want to say anything that's not true. But there's a lot of applications where people have used this beyond the classroom setting. Yeah.
That is really amazing to think that it could be, you know, it's impacting education globally, clearly, but then it's also impacting scientific research globally. So I think that's really amazing. So what challenges have you faced in promoting the adoption of FoldScope in educational settings?
You know, it's really funny that we, you know, thinking about the cost of this tool has been one of those things where it's like a blessing and a curse, because when you tell people that you have a paper microscope that costs about $2, I people will say, there's no way that's gonna work. It's obviously just something that, you know, unfortunately it, like, you know, makes people think of like that ubiquitous hand lens that's in all classrooms that really doesn't, you know, doesn't show you too much, and kids end up scratching it all up and you can't really see anything out of it, kind of thing. But I'm like, I promise you, it really does work. So it's one of those things where it really does benefit the consumer to actually see it in action, to be able to, you know, hold it in their hands, look at it, and, you know, be able to actually look at samples. Because that is, I think that's probably our biggest issue, is trying to get people to understand that the low cost does not mean low quality. It really is a high quality tool. And, you know, going to the, you know, our website and looking at all the pictures that, you know, people have taken with it, it's real. It's the real deal. And I think that that's what we need to, you know, a lot of times people do, they think that for something to work well, it has to be expensive. And, you know, while that may be for some things, it's not the case for this. It really is a tool that that the cost should be something that makes more people gravitate toward it. But it does make some people nervous, unfortunately. So the more we can get people to see it and, you know, hold it in their hands and just kind of promote it and share with others to get, you know, more people on board with it, that's really what we need, so that people aren't afraid of that low cost, meaning low quality.
Yeah, I think that the microcosmos that you have on your website is really good for that, because it's demonstrating actual samples viewed through the FoldScope and showing, like, look, you can see the stuff that you're interested in looking at in the classroom, or in the field. So, yeah, I think I think that's a really good way to help people to see it. If they can't actually like see a demo live, you know, like where they can, and actually like hold it in their hands, then at least you've got that where you've got the proof, you know, and it's from like actual users instead of, you know, just your actual, like, you know, photos that you guys have taken. It's like, these are people that have a full scope and they've used it and they've found these cool things.
Because I definitely don't want people to think that I'm, you know, staging these photos and not actually using a full scope. Everything that I post is, you know, whether it's on the Microcosmos or on my social media or anything, it is stuff that I'm taking with my Foldscope. And I'm, you know, very clear to let people know that this is, and again, not from somebody with a microbiology background, and I'm able to get these just amazing clear images. And I don't know that it's necessarily me. I think it's the tool that's making it possible. But just getting people to understand that it's the real deal. It really is. And, you know, it's so fun. It's so much fun to use because you never know what you're going to find when you put something on a slide, you know?
Yeah. Well, can you share some stories from some of your Foldscope users of, you know, how they've used the Foldscope and what they've seen?
Yeah. So, you know, when I think about like my success stories kind of, you know, like from what people are telling me, one big example was, I live on my street. I've got a lot of people who are master gardeners, which is wonderful because we have a common area with all these plants and flowers and it's beautiful and gorgeous because they maintain it. But one of them noticed, and I'm known on the street as I'm the microscope lady, I'm the bug lady, you know, I'm the one who's always going out there looking for those tiny little things to look at. But she noticed, one of the master gardeners noticed, she said, there's something that is on a lot of our plants and it looks like a powder. And she's like, I don't know if it's a fungus or, you know, what this is. And I was just like, I will be right there. So I, you know, got my Foldscope and went out and I just, all I did was I just took a piece of tape and put it on the powder and then put that on a slide and put it in there. And we were able to see that these were actually like, and I can't remember the name of them, but they were actually these tiny little mites that were
mealybugs.
I don't know. Because when I think of mealybugs, I think of like the worms, like the mealworms. I don't know if it was.
I remember finding like a powdery little mite.
It might back, be.
I don't know. I have a lot of plants. I guess, you know, if you're looking at the video, you can see a couple of them behind me. But, I remember it just being like this powdery stuff. And then it turned out they were like tiny mites. Yeah. And they were mealybugs. But anyways.
Well, it could be. It could be. But I, you know, basically I, you know, took a picture of it and gave it to her. And she was like, oh my gosh, now we, you know, we'll be able to know how to take care of these plants and get rid of these. So, I mean, that was just, and that took us all of, you know, 5 minutes to be able to do that.
That's
cool. So that was a huge success story, you know, in terms of what they were able to, you know, what we were able to do with that. So, but other types of, I guess, success stories is thinking about, did a training for professors who were in agricultural sciences, and they were looking at how to be able to, you know, analyze their soil samples and things like that, and learning how to, you know, use a Foldscope to be able to do that. And, you know, just thinking about all the different types of nematodes that are able to be discovered and everything, because, you know, honestly, when I first heard of a nematode, I'm like, they're all the same. There's these wiggly little worms, but there are so many different kinds. And, you know, just being able to figure out which ones you have and, you know, all that kind of stuff is pretty cool. It's really neat.
So how do you encourage users to identify what they have found? What are the tools that you use for that next step?
Yeah, so really it's going to, I rely a lot on, searches, you know, going into databases and things like that. One of the things we really want to do is to be able to have the Microcosmos website serve as that database. Mm-hmm. So I do try to, when I find something, you know, to be able to say what it is. And there are a lot of scientists who will, you know, this is the specimen that I found. Here's the, you know, the species name, and here are the identifying features. So just putting that information into that one spot is a really, really great way to be able to help with the identification. Even just writing, and you actually are inspiring me to think maybe I need to write a blog about this, but, you know, choosing a general thing like nematodes and writing a blog about here are the identifying features so that users then know what to look for when they're, you know, when they find one. But yeah, those are really the key ways. Is just the Microcosmos is a big one. There's a lot of professors who will post things on there that help me a lot personally. So I know that they're probably helping others as well.
Yeah. So I guess if someone finds something, then if they search in the Microcosmos, do they actually just have to try to use key terms based on like what they're seeing?
Yeah, so you can do that. You can do a search in the Microcosmos. So you can search for a general term or, you know, type of microorganism. But mm-hmm. the other thing is the Microcosmos is definitely a dynamic community site. So people can comment on your on what you have. So I've had plenty of times where I've put in there, I found this. Anybody know what it is? And, you know, people will respond to it and let you know, okay, you found such and such. And, you know, so there's that aspect of it as well.
That is really cool. I do love that there's a community aspect to it where you can comment. Because I know sometimes I've posted on either Instagram or Twitter or X, like, and then you can get people to have their, you know, to give their input on what potentially you're looking at. But the Microcosmos, I love that that's like specific to Foldscope. So it's like people are already, their eyes are tuned to what things look like through the Foldscope and then maybe identify them a little bit better. Have you heard of iNaturalist before?
Oh, yes. Yes, I love iNaturalist and Seek. That's a partner with iNaturalist, yeah.
I don't know about Seek, but I have used iNaturalist, and it's amazing that you can upload microorganisms, and it'll still give you an identification for those. So I have found that to be very helpful.
Okay, because I had tried in the past, and it gave me like wonky, weird answers. So I just didn't think that was, maybe it's a more recent thing. I need to go back and relook at that.
Yeah, I'm sure it's not perfect, but yeah, I recently, I found some, I think it was a flatworm, and I was like, what is this? So I put it in, and then it said that it was a type of flatworm. I was like, wow, so cool, because it just looked like a worm of some kind. I'm not like a flatworm expert, so, but it was very helpful to see that, and then, you know, taking that information it gives you, which is like, it gives you a little bit more of a specific term for the flatworm, and then you can Google that, and then you see, oh, okay, these photos are really similar to what I'm seeing. That's so cool. So that's what I tend to refer people to as well. But how cool would it be if you guys had something like that with your database of images, where you could like do a reverse image search kind of thing through the database? That would be amazing.
Yeah. And that's why we're encouraging, you know, everyone who gets a Foldscope, create an account on the Microcosmos and just keep putting your, you know, what you're finding, what your discoveries are, keep putting them in there. And, you know, I also don't want people to think, oh, well, if I don't know what it is, I can't put it in there. Because, like I said, people will help you out, you know, with the identification and everything. So let's just, get as many images as we can in there so that we can lead on to something like that.
Yeah, definitely. That would be really neat to see. It'll be cool to see how that develops. Okay, so I know, like, we've talked about that this is a great tool for educators. So if educators are like, wow, this is so cool, I didn't know about this, how can I use this in the classroom? Like, what advice do you have for educators to start using the Fold Scope in their curriculum?
Yeah, so this is it's a big thing for me is I get people, you know, people get really excited. So once they hear about it and they've convinced themselves, okay, yes, this is going to work. I'm going to get my Fold Scopes. And there are so many times where I have come across people who've gotten their Fold Scopes and I'll reach out to them. So how's everything going? They're like, I haven't opened the box. I don't want to mess it up. I'm really afraid. And I'm thinking, oh my goodness, it's not going to do you any good if it stays in the box, you know? So I think that one of the first things, again, it goes to that, that accessibility, right? Like, do I think that I'm going to be able to use this? So I would say first thing, don't be afraid of the tool. You know, it's going to be okay. So just, you know, kind of get over the fear and just kind of dive in. Just give it a go is really the first thing. We do have a ton of resources available on our website. We've got tutorials, we've got stuff that's, you know, written out for you so that you can see pictures that go with the words. We also have a YouTube channel with a lot of explainer videos, you know, and I've made a few of them too that are, you know, showing me actually using it to kind of walk you through how it all works. So use the resources that we have on our website, on our YouTube channel. And then the next thing, and this is kind of a challenge for some teachers, let your students lead the way. You know, they let them put them together. You know, I mean, how cool is that to be able to say as a student, I built my own microscope. You know, I mean, that's something that's really, really cool to be able to have that sense of accomplishment. And then let them explore. You know, you might have your idea for how a microscope, you know, air quotes, should be used. Cause you know, you think about when you've used it, it's the onion, you know, and staining it to be able to see the nucleus and, you know, things like that and doing the cheek cell. Let your students find stuff to put underneath the microscope. You know, let their curiosity lead the way and then you can find ways to tie what they are finding out there in the world. You can find ways to bring that back in and connect it to your curriculum. But letting their excitement and their curiosity, letting that lead the lesson, I think is gonna take you so much further than saying this is the one way that you're allowed to use a microscope. So yeah, letting them have fun with it. And then the other thing too is, you know, just get creative. Think about ways that you can, I really try to, in a lot of the blogs that I write and the pictures that I post, thinking about ways to bring in that art component. Because pictures, you know, microscopic pictures are beautiful. And that's a way to be able to help people to kind of get more interested in what's actually out there when they see just how pretty some of these things can be. You know, I mean, I remember the first time I saw a euglena just kind of like floating around on the slide. And I was like, this is just gorgeous. You know, just thinking about the fact that that was in this drop of water that had I not put that on the slide, I wouldn't have even known it was there. So yeah, just being creative and coming up with new and innovative ways, because now you have a tool that is not something that has to be limited to just being in a classroom. Go outside. I mean, you're not going to be at a loss for finding samples just by walking out the door, you know? So yeah, I think those are the big ones. Don't be afraid. Use the resources. Let your students lead the way and be creative.
Yeah, those are great. Those are really helpful tips. I think about the, like, don't be afraid part, I think is really important. You know, it's like you just have to dig in and try it out and not be worried because, like, you're not going to break it. And and also I love that you have resources in different formats. So, excuse me, you have like written out content and then you have videos. And so it's like, depending on how you like to consume information, it's available for you. Exactly. Because I know that I have a friend that loves to read, and she would prefer to just read a guide. And then mm-hmm. for me, I would prefer to listen to someone explain it or just see a video. But then also, it's like sometimes you want the quick, like, I just need to read this really quickly. And so you have both. And I think that's really helpful, because with the Foldscope particularly, I think it helps a lot to see it in action. And there was one video that I watched to see the kombucha sample. It was to figure out how to get it in focus and everything. Mm-hmm. And you had like one little tip that was like, take the lens, because it's magnetic, like you said, turn mm-hmm. it 90 degrees.
Yeah.
And you'll get a little more space. And then that helped. And mm-hmm. So it's just little things like that, those tips that you guys give in the videos that are, it's very helpful for getting a really good and clear image.
Yeah. And I would just, one other thing that I would also say for teachers is I want all of the teachers, educators, even individuals who are buying, you know, the individual kits, that I want you to know that you're not like on this journey by yourself. It truly is a community at Foldscope. And we have, in addition to those resources that are there, we do have trainings that we do. So you've got a variety of options for that. So if you're in a school and you want to train all of your teachers in how to use Foldscopes, we have trainings that we can do either online or in person for schools, for multiple people. If you are an individual, or maybe you're the only teacher at your school who's using a Foldscope and you want to learn, we also have 90-minute online workshops where you can sign up and, you know, we'll teach you how to use the Foldscope. We've got Foldscope 101, which is just, how do I use the Foldscope? Then we have another one that I lead called Foldscope for Educators. And so now you might know how to use the Foldscope, but then you're thinking, how do I use this in my classroom? So that's what that workshop is for. So we have a variety of ways. So if you don't feel as confident, you know, just looking at the resources and learning it on your own, just know that we here at Foldscope, we are here to help you learn how to use it. So there are those workshops and the trainings that you can do as well. Because we want we want you to use this tool. You know, like I said, it's not going to do any good sitting in a box and, you know, gathering dust. We want it used, so.
Yeah. And, I mean, the whole reason why I'm having you on is because it's such an accessible tool. Like, it's so inexpensive, but it's so powerful. And I think it's funny that that ends up being actually a barrier to people using it and buying it. They don't believe in the product. So that's why I feel really excited to talk to you about all of this, because it's like you're offering something that is so inexpensive, and yet it gets you... It gives you the ability to see into a world that you can't see without this tool, you know? So I think it's amazing.
It literally opens up worlds.
It's so cool. So we have the original Foldscope, the Foldscope 2.0, which then lets you see even more. So what are the other products that you offer?
Okay, so the other Foldscope that we have, which... I personally think this one is the neatest one. It's the Foldscope Mini, and it is very bare bones. It's 140x magnification, just like that's kind of like our standard is 140x, but it's a piece of paper that has kind of just one fold, and then you have a functional microscope.
Wow.
This is, you know, it doesn't have any of the magnets or anything like that, so it's not something that, you know, you would be using, like, with a screen or anything like that, which makes it, which I think makes it perfect for, like, just that very introductory, you've got a classroom full of kindergartners or, you know, you're like, let's go and explore and see what we can see, and... You know, you don't need the glass slides. You can use the cards to, there's a little pocket back there where you put it in there. Or you can just put like a leaf or flower petal directly in. You don't even need to have a slide. But the Foldscope Mini is one that I absolutely love. The other major product that we have is we have these Micro Realms Explorer cards. Series 1 is out and available on our store right now. I know we are recording in May, so as of now, we have Series 1 out. And these are cards that are, again, the same size as like the playing cards, as the blank trading cards that we have. But these are prepared slides that completely change the way you think of a prepared slide. When I typically think of a glass slide, you know, one of the prepared slides, glass slides, it's very cold and clinical. It has a sample on it, and it has the scientific name done. But you can give this to, you know, even a child who doesn't yet know how to read. Like, they could take this and they'd be like, oh, this must have a B on it because there's that picture that's on there. You know, so it's just, they're really beautifully made. They've got scientific information on there. And then around the edge, it's really, really tiny, but around the edge, they have fun facts and things like that. But these, I think, are... They're really going to help people to have more fun with microscopy, I think. It just makes it more engaging. And like I said, this is Series 1, so it can make you think something's coming in the future. But that's another thing that we have. But we have tons of accessories that you can also get. You know, there's light modules that you can get to that are, you know, magnets that stick onto the back of the Foldscope. There's all of the extras, like, you know, the replenishing of the stickers and things like that. So there's lots of accessories there. And of course, you know, always our trainings to help you learn how to use all of these tools.
Yeah, that's great. Okay, so we're kind of starting to wrap up now. But something that I like to ask people that come on the podcast is, what have you learned overall from your work that has changed how you think about microbes in your daily life?
I mean, honestly, just how much is out there. And it was one of those things where it's kind of like, conceptually, you read about it, you learn about it and all that kind of stuff. But once you actually see it and experience it, it truly is mind-boggling. You know, thinking about everything that, you know, when I first started learning about diatoms and understanding that these teeny tiny little silica-based, you know, silica-surrounded algae cells, that they make up like 25% to a third of the oxygen in our atmosphere. And it's like, what? How did that? That's just crazy. So just learning just how important these tiny little creatures are to the survival of us and, you know, all living things on the planet. It really makes you kind of stop and appreciate how much there is out there that we still don't know, you know? And that's what kind of, that's another one of those things that really makes me excited about getting Foldscopes into the hands of people, is because if we only have microscopes in the hands of the certain few who have access to just a small part of the planet, imagine if we are able to get them into the hands of, you know, everyone, and then just think about all the different things that we could discover that are out there. That's just, the potential is huge, and it really is, it's kind of awe-inspiring to think that it could be any of us who go out there and, you know, find something new, because are scientists out there studying your plot of land where your house happens to be? Probably not, but, you know, you never know what you can find.
Yeah, I love that. Of course, we always have an activity at the end of the podcast, and with this, it's like obvious that it works well with activities. So what at-home microbiology have you brought to share that will help us experience the microbial world in a hands-on way?
So when you had, you know, posed this question, when I thought about like all the different guests that have been on and everything, you know, I was like, okay, I gotta come up with something really good. But honestly, when I think about experiences related to science, again, I think about the equity and the accessibility. A lot of microbes are studied that live in the water, but not everyone has the ability to get to a beach or, you know, go to a lake or other big body of water. to be able to study what, the microbial ecosystem that lives within there. But a lot of schools have fish tanks. So I was thinking, okay, so that could be a cool way to, study the microscopic world just on a, a little bit smaller scale. Mm. And so just being able to take a sample from a fish tank and look at it underneath your foldscope and see what's there. I know that when I had, and this is just the way that my family gatherings go because they know me, at my brother-in-law's, they have a fish tank. And we had, when we went for Thanksgiving, they told me that they wanted me to bring my foldscope because they wanted to see what's living in their fish tank. And all we did was we just took a little clip off of one of the plants that they have, one of the aquatic plants that's in there. And I mean, just the amount of stuff that was just around that one tiny little thing. Like, I don't know if you're familiar with Vorticella or not.
Maybe, but go ahead and describe.
So they're basically, they look like a little teacup that's on a stalk. Mm. And they have the corona, the cilia at the top that, creates the vortex so that they can capture their food, their filter feeders. And whenever they sense a disturbance, that stalk that they're on that attaches them to whatever substrate they want to be on, it snaps back and it coils up super, super fast. Like it's so amazing to watch. And then as they realize, okay, the danger is past, then they slowly unfurl their stalk and they come back up again and open up their cilia. They are really neat to see. And they were over this plant.
Wow.
It was great. It was really, really neat. But, when you think about doing an at-home activity, it could just be fun just to see what's in there. But if you're doing this in a science classroom and you want to make it more experimental, then you can introduce variables. You can look at the microbial life before and after cleaning your fish tank. You can look at, different layers within the water column. What kind of life is at the top versus what's down there at the bottom? So there's lots of different ways that you can see that you can take this activity and keep it just as fun and exploratory as doing a biodiversity study, or, like I said, finding those variables and doing those comparison studies and seeing what changes and is that good or is that bad,
Yeah, I love that. That's really cool. And like you said, you looked at a little piece of a plant and then you can compare around the plant versus just out in the water as well.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, there's so many variables you can play around with. So I love that activity. That's really good. Do you have any resources? Obviously, the Foldscope website is a great resource and the Microcosmos. But do you have any other resources that you'd recommend for listeners to go deeper on this topic?
Yeah, so I mentioned briefly that I write blogs for Foldscope. I've got two that I write. One is called Foldscope Explores, and that is just random things that I'm looking at and, interested in and putting underneath my Foldscope, and just using a variety of the tools. I use the images that I put in those blogs. I'll use the 2.0, I've used the original, I've used the mini, so just showing you all the different things that you can explore with your Foldscopes. The other blog that I write is called Foldscope in the Classroom, and that one is a little more structured, obviously, because it's wanting to help teachers incorporate this tool into their everyday, everyday lessons and things like that. So that's another one that I would highly recommend that people go to get ideas for, lesson seeds kind of thing. So
that's great.
And then I'm trying to think if there's any others. Really, those, our YouTube channel, all the ones that I mentioned before, and those are the key places that I would say to let people go to learn more about our products and get more comfortable with them.
That's really good that you have those two kind of different blogs that provide information for the different types of users out there.
Right.
So we talked about that you like to post on social media. So where can everyone find, follow, and connect with you?
So as far as Foldscope goes, we do have, we've got all of our social media channels. We are usually at Team Foldscope. So that's on Instagram and Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it. So that's where you can find the company there. We are on Facebook as well. And we have our YouTube channel. And I post a lot of just pictures that I take with my Foldscope on my own personal Twitter account, and that's at Holly A. Stewart. And the important thing to remember is Stewart is spelled S-T-U-A-R-T. So, but yeah, Holly A. Stewart, and then everything else is Team Foldscope is where you can find us.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Holly, for coming on and sharing about Foldscope and sharing your story as well. And I think this is going to be really helpful for a lot of people. So I appreciate your time.
Yeah, thank you very much for having us. And thank you for all of your support for our company and our mission and just making microscopy fun. I love the title of your podcast too, Joyful Microbe. It just makes people feel more comfortable with it. So I love that.
Thank you. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Joyful Microbe Podcast. Please subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss an episode. If you'd like to help others who love microbes to find the podcast, then please leave a rating and a review for the show. And tell a friend. To learn more about the Joyful Microbe, head on over to joyfulmicrobe.com, where you will find the show notes and all the links and resources mentioned. If you love Joyful Microbe and would like to support the show, you can do so by leaving a virtual tip through Ko-fi. The link is in the show notes and on joyfulmicrobe.com at the bottom of the page. Thanks again, microbe friends. Talk to you next time.